When I was doing this, these two ladies came to see me. The first one, her problem, they were both sisters, her problem, she was married, she had a husband, she was having a lot of suffering with her husband. He was giving her a very difficult time. She had husband suffering. And when I sort of talked to her about being content, having more loving kindness, whatever it is, then I asked her, sister, what's your problem? And she said, I'm single. I want a husband, I can't find one. I thought of a solution, but they wouldn't buy it. Well, someone had a husband they didn't want. Somebody didn't have one and they wanted one. It was obvious to me. But afterwards I told her, madam, the one who's married, you've got married woman suffering. You've got single woman suffering. If you get rid of your husband, you won't have married woman suffering anymore. You'll have single woman suffering. And you, if you want a husband, you won't have single woman suffering anymore. You'll have married woman suffering. You don't get rid of the suffering, do you? Because that's what happens. People think, oh, when I meet my partner in life, when I meet the one who's made for me, then I'll be happy ever after. Get real. You know what the word marriage means? It actually comes from a Latin word meaning to gamble. It's true. Marriage means to gamble. It's a big gamble. So whatever. That when a person gets married, they let go of, they've given up single person suffering. Now they've got married person suffering. So all of you who are thinking, I want to get rid of this husband of mine, I want to get rid of this wife of mine, you're not going to get rid of suffering. You're going to just change one type of suffering for another type of suffering. Those of you who are working, you think, oh, I have to work so hard. Oh, I have to get up so early in the morning. Oh, it's just so tough at work. I want to change my job. You don't get rid of suffering. You change this work suffering to another type of work suffering. And if you lose your job, you don't have workers suffering anymore. You have out-of-work suffering. It's the same when we grow up. Kids, they can't wait to grow up because they've got young people suffering. We think, why are they suffering for? Kids have so much fun. You forget, when you were young, you wanted to grow up because you had young people suffering. When you get to be a teenager, you don't have kids suffering anymore, you have teenage suffering. When you grow up to be an adult, you get adult suffering. You don't have teenage suffering or young people suffering anymore. And when you get old, you don't have middle-aged suffering anymore. You have old-age suffering. People want to retire and they think, when I retire, then I'll be happy. This because when you retire, it's actually usually the old people go to temples and they go to churches. Look how many people go to temples and churches when they're old. You know why? Because they think, when I die and go to heaven, then I'll be happy. But when you go to heaven, you just get heaven suffering, that's all. You don't get rid of it. Imagine what it's like in heaven. When I was taught about heaven, it was like you eat ambrosia. And you have all these people playing harps all the time. After a while, that would really get up your nose. Harp music again, day after day after day. Ambrosia. Can't I have some noodles? Can't I have a Big Mac? Actually, this happened once. This man was in heaven. And he was having ambrosia. All the people were dressed in white. Even the girls, just white shawls with little rings on their head. The fashion hadn't changed for thousands of years. So he went up to complain. He said, look, why don't we have some proper music up here? I like rock music instead of this harp stuff. Can't we get a few electric guitars up here? He said, all this ambrosia, can't we have a menu? Can't we have some nice noodles from Singapore? Can't we have some nice vegetarian food from Europe? And also, I'm in heaven now, I'm supposed to be enjoying myself. Can't we have people a bit more fashion? And the angel said, look, I'm sorry, we can't do that. It's tradition. And at that time, he got a vision of hell. And down in hell, They had these great rock bands. He saw it down there in his vision. These really cool bands. And the women down there, they were all dressed in beautiful dresses from Milan, great hairstyles. All the men were in Gucci suits. And the food down there was like a 5-star restaurant. And he said, look, that's what they have in hell. Why can't we have better than that in heaven? And up in heaven, the angel said, it's tradition. It's been like this all the time. We can't change it now. Thousands of years it's like this. And the man said, he complained, this is unfair. I want it like it's done. I want good food, good music, nice, beautiful women, and nice, beautiful men. I'm in heaven after all. And all the angel would say, look, if you like it that much, you can go down to hell. And he said, okay, I will. So he went down to hell. And he couldn't see any beautiful music or beautiful girls or wonderful food. These terrible demons with big fangs came along and put him in a big cauldron of boiling oil and started poking him with these forks. He said, hang on, what about my vision? In my vision I saw these beautiful girls, I saw this great music and delicious food. What about my vision? And the demon said, oh, that vision, yes, that's our advertising campaign. Never believe your adverts. So, even in heaven you have heavenly suffering. The point is that in those sorts of worlds, sometimes we look and there's always some type of suffering in our life. When would you ever get happiness? We always think that when I become rich, then I'll be happy. As a poor person, you get poor person suffering. As a rich person, you have rich person suffering. You're not getting rid of suffering that way. But a few times in my life as a monk, when I stopped complaining, actually life wasn't so bad. A lot of times I realized that when I complain, it was my thinking was being negative. Too often in life we think in negative terms. That's one of the great reasons why we suffer. We are complainers. The Buddha called it the fault-finding mind. It's so easy to find fault with life, fault with your partner, fault with yourself, fault with anything. Even up in heaven you can find fault if you look hard enough. Now the point is that really being fair to life? Someone asked me a good question as I came in here. They said, is it just right to be an optimist and think what a wonderful world this is and how great it is? Is that really being real and rational? Is that what happiness is, being in delusion and fantasy? I said, no, it's not. Well, then should I be a pessimist? Because I read in the newspapers all these tragedies, the war in Iraq, the terrible things which people do, sometimes children getting hurt and abused, cancers in our community, people dying young, all these tragedies in life. How can there be happiness when we have all these tragedies? And I told them the story. Well, I should have told them the story. I wanted to expand upon what I said outside, inside today. That very often we can look at the world and see just what's wrong. In brief, I told them the story of my brick wall. Many of you have heard that before, so I'm going to say it very, very brief. Now you want me to say it again? Okay. The story of my brick wall. I told you yesterday that when I became a monk, I had to work hard. When I first went to Australia, we only had very little support. The reason was because people didn't trust us. They didn't know who we were. Who were these guys in brown robes? Were we real monks or fake monks? So for the first year or two, the people looked at us to check us out, as you should do. As they were checking us out, we didn't get much support, but we needed a place to stay. So our monastery, the land which we bought, was empty of any buildings. We spent all our money just buying the land. We had nowhere to stay. My first place where I stayed in that monastery was a door on three bricks on every corner. And the door was brought from a salvage yard. Because I was a second monk, the abbot got the best door, the one which was flat. Mine had ribs on it. Also, the door hole, the doorknob was in the middle of the door. They had to take the doorknob out, so I had a hole in the middle of my bed. I joked, at least I didn't need to get out of bed to go to the toilet. But the wind would come up in the morning, would come up through that hole. I hardly slept. It was very, very tough those first few years as a monk. And we used to work so hard, many hours a day. I had to learn how to build. Yesterday I said about learning how to do plumbing. I also had to learn how to lay bricks. Laying bricks is not easy. You think all you have to do is put some mortar down, put a brick on top and make it level. But when you put the mortar down, you put the brick on top, there's always one end is higher than the others. So you have to tap that end down. That end goes down, another end goes up. So you have to tap that end down. Then it moves out of line. So you've got to tap it into line again. Then the first end goes up. It takes forever to get that brick straight. But one thing which I had, which all monks have, is patience. Doesn't matter how long it takes, I'm going to make sure that every brick is perfect. So, that's what I did. Every brick I made sure, if it wasn't right, I'd take it off and start again. When I finished my first brick wall, I looked at it and I was so disappointed. I was so shocked. I was so distressed. I'd missed two bricks. All the other ones were nice and level, but two bricks with this awful angle, and they spoiled the whole wall. I tried to take them out, but the cement was just so hard, they just would not come out. And so I talked to the other monk with me, and I said, "Can we buy some dynamite? Can I blow up that wall and start again?" And he said, "No. I wanted to destroy that wall, because I'd made a mess of the first building project I did at that monastery. And I was so disappointed. And I saw it every day. Every day I went past that wall. I was so upset as I saw the two bad bricks and my mistakes. When visitors came, I always managed to take them somewhere else. So they wouldn't see my mistakes, because your mistakes are always embarrassed about. But one day, a visitor came. I was with them. They saw that wall. And what they said was, 'That's a beautiful wall.' I said to them, 'Are you crazy? Are you blind? Have you left your glasses in the car? Can't you see the two bad bricks?' And they said, 'Yes, I can see the two bad bricks, but I can also see the 998 good bricks as well.'" That hit me like a brick. I realized my mistake, not only in that wall, but in life as well. Just too often, all we see is our two mistakes, and you become blind to anything else other than what is wrong. That's what was happening to me. Every time I passed that wall, my eyes would just go to my faults, my mistakes. I could not see anything other than my two mistakes. Once they were pointed out, I realized for every two bad bricks, there was 998 good bricks. I realized in life, every time I saw a tragedy in life, every time I saw someone being abused or hurt, there were 998 times, or probably much more, when people were being kind and caring and beautiful and wonderful and loving and generous and inspiring. But why is it we only see the faults in life? This is a psychology of the mind, which once you understand this, why is it do we always dwell on faults and mistakes? And why is it we can never see beyond the mistakes and faults in life?